And welcome to another episode of the Philly Sports Passion Podcast and the PSC Show. I'm your host, Kyle Lutz, with co-host and showrunner Eric Jacinto. And today we're going to have some fun because we're getting to a little bit of back and forth debating, fun debate on not only some of the hottest topics surrounding, you know, the Phillies and some other things, but we're also doing a special edition show today where we go over a list we created and came up with separately of our opinion of the five greatest ever and five worst ever head coaches slash managers in Philadelphia sports history among the four Philadelphia teams. So, Eric, it's good to be back on, and we have a lot to talk about today.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's good to be back.
Absolutely. So, you know, storied history for all four Philadelphia sports teams, but, you know, there's a lot of interesting personalities that come in and out of town, you know, so, you know, I think it's kind of interesting. You get a lot of people forget about all the great coaches that come in, but you also, you know, sometimes overlook the bad ones and the good ones because there's such focus being put on the players. And, you know, we wanted to kind of focus on that a little bit. It kind of got me thinking a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, I think it was, you know, an interesting thing to kind of talk about. So we wanted to get into that, and we're going to start with the five worst head coaches, and it sounds like Eric, you wanted to do back and forth. So my number five pick for the worst coaches in Philadelphia sports was Doug Moe. Often gets forgotten about, was the Sixers coach briefly in the 92-93 season. Was kind of before, you know, the successful late 90s, early 2000 Sixers, and then, you know, early to mid 80s successful Sixers. And then he was on, you know, he wasn't as well known as some other coaches, but he actually got fired in his first season. And he's been an assistant on a lot of teams. You know, he was with San Antonio as a coach, as a head coach, and then coached Denver for a lengthy period of time before coming to Philadelphia, and then most recently was a Nuggets assistant. Actually had some decent years coaching Denver and San Antonio, but it just seemed like, you know, I know he only coached here for a year, but the fact that he had such a poor record, 19 wins, 37 losses, .339 winning percentage, and fired mid-season, you know, that team was kind of in transition, but I'm going to kind of go with him. I don't think there's, you know, a huge explanation, you know, going with him since he's my number five guy. So you wanted to go ahead with your number five pick for the worst coach.
I'm going to go with Ryan Sandberg because he basically quit on us. And for that, I have to put him in the top five. And he wasn't that great of a manager, but he was a great ball player. I'll give him that. I respect him as a ball player. He's in the Hall of Fame, but he was just not a good manager, in my opinion.
No, you know, he's another guy that, you know, was kind of in between successful teams. I know this Phillies team right now is not, you know, kind of found its stride yet and it's not peaking, but he's kind of another guy that was on some losing teams, but he wasn't a real hot personality. He wasn't a guy that, you know, was seemed very intelligent. And, you know, it was kind of interesting. We're actually going to work backwards. So I want to give you, I want you to give your number four pick and then I'll give mine. And then we'll kind of flip-flop.
Sounds good. My number four is Chip Kelly. He coached 47 games here, even though he had a winning record. I don't think his style worked in the NFL, and it was shown after he got fired and went to San Francisco. He got fired the following year. So he got fired twice in 2 years. I think it was awful. But he's a better college coach, I'll give him that. But Chip Kelly is number four for me.
Yeah, and he was a disaster of a GM here too. Obviously trading Shady, trading Foles, and you know, it ended up working out where something explosive really happens in a bad way, and the team just blows up, and the coach is just making, you know, monumentally poor decisions, both as the coach and the GM. And he was a guy, Philadelphia teams have hired a handful over the years of college coaches. Dave Hackstall, Chip, Dick Vermeil was a college coach, wedged in between his NFL years. But I never got the impression that that Chip was he was kind of a smart X's and O's guy when he first came out. But once people figured out his game plan and his attack, his first year here, he was very successful and nearly won a playoff game versus New Orleans, I believe, at home. Then he didn't make adjustments, kind of like Andy Reid. And, he kind of just went down with the ship. So that's a good pick. Number four, I'm going to go Gabe. I actually originally had him higher. But I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he hasn't been here as long as some of the other guys higher up that have had, or other guys that didn't make the list that, you know, theoretically could have been up there. But some of them are tough calls. But I'm not a big favorite of his, as you know. But I just don't like his moves, and I think he's, you know, at cause for some of the problems with this team. But I think it's also fair to say that this team just as bad as the decisions in game that he's made this year, this team's pitching has just been monumentally poor. And you know, Drew Smiley or any reliever coming off of the DL, you know, is not going to make it, you know, the huge impact that this team needs to kind of overhaul this pitching staff right now that, you know, Gabe has had to work with, or really not. And you don't know really what to do with Vince Velasquez. And, you know, you got Dave Robertson, but he's on the DL, and Dominguez. So, you know, all these guys are on the DL, and Aaron Nola, I'm not sure what's up with him. He's taken a huge step back, and he's been better lately. But, and then Jake Arrieta, I think that was just a poor signing. And so, you know, to kind of culminate, all these moves, you know, are kind of backfiring on the team, and some of them are draft picks, and some of them are acquisitions, you know, in the market through free agency or signing or whatever it may be. And I think people that are putting the blame on Gabe, you know, whether it be on, you know, calling in the WIP or 97.5 or on Facebook, are giving him, you know, I think some of it's fair, but, I don't want to go off into a tangent, but I think he's definitely not the worst guy that's ever coached here. So Gabe is not my number four pick. Did you have your number three pick ready?
You can go ahead first.
I was actually kind of debating on this because there were some guys that that had success here but were just incredibly stupid with their moves. You know, like a guy like Andy Reid, I consider putting on this list before I get into anything else. I'm going to go with Jim Fregosi. I know he was the coach on that on the 93 Phillies team, but he kind of seemed like he was a guy that was stuck with a lot of talent. And, you know, Dykstra had a peak year, was on steroids. He admitted it. Clark was a good player. Dalton was a good player. Schilling, you know, he even got some spot guys like Mahaland and you know, a decent bullpen. And then some other guys performed, but, you know, I don't think that he was as good as his record shows. You know, and as bad as this city, or some of the fans in the city dislike Andy Reid, I'm not a huge fan of him. He's, you know, arguably the most successful coach in franchise history for the Eagles over an extended period of time. Now, Doug Peterson has a Super Bowl, and we'll see, you know, what he does in the future in terms of playoff wins and you know, and postseason appearances and whatnot. But I was kind of debating on this because the latter part was kind of tough, so I went with Fregosi at number three. I'm actually going to fill out my top two while you're, you know, deciding on your picks. Number two, I went with Ray Rhodes, the Eagles. He actually won Coach of the Year in his first year here in 95. You know, won a Super Bowl with the Niners. I believe he was their defensive coordinator when they won the Super Bowl over the Chargers in 1995. And then later that year, the Eagles hired him after that, after some guy named Rich Kotite was just, you know, had a disastrous end of the season. So Rhodes kind of made it he was very impressive earlier on in his stint. And then you just kind of saw the worst come out of him the last couple of years. You know, I don't like to put him that high just because he won Coach of the Year and they made the playoffs. And ironically, I believe they lost to his former team, the 49ers, in the playoffs. Actually, no, that was the second year. His first year, he beat the Lions and lost to the Cowboys. In his second year, he won a playoff game and he won Coach of the Year. But I feel like his last couple of years here is what makes him, you know, one of the worst coaches in this city just because of, you know, some of the stupid things he did. And his motivational tactics were extremely strange, very bizarre. So, you know, I think we kind of – we needed a new fresh face in town with Andy in 99 once that, you know, disastrous end of the Ray Rhodes period wrapped up. So my number one, Rich Kotite. I think he's actually by far the worst coach or manager in this city, in the sports city. He's just a guy who took over for a guy in Buddy Ryan who was not only a fan favorite, but, you know, a defensive mastermind, a genius when it comes to, you know, attacking the quarterback, blitzing with the 46 defense. Obviously won a Super Bowl with Chicago, won a Super Bowl with the Jets too. You know, and obviously he struggled to get along with management because Norman Brandon was just not really interested in the team other than from a financial aspect. So kind of segueing into Kotite, you know, it was kind of tough because he got a really good defense even after the 91 season, and he had some of the players that were on Buddy Ryan teams and just were you know, Pro Bowl caliber, all pro players year in, year out. And then in 91 he puts it together. You know, he has the best defense in all of football from Buddy Ryan's defense, but they missed the playoffs because of injuries at quarterback. But then he just makes stupid decision after stupid decision. I feel like the Eagles kind of rushed the hiring process and getting him. You know, he had the wet chart game where he didn't know whether to go to a two-point conversion or not because the chart got wet. And then he said 8-8 is good. And then his last year here, he started out 7-2. And then lost every game after that. And then he was somehow even worse with the Jets. But yeah, he never coached again in college, pro, anything. That's how bad he was with the Eagles and the Jets. So I feel like he got handed a Super Bowl team, and unfortunately Randall Cunningham gets injured and out for the year. But a couple years after that, he had some serviceable teams. So the one thing I'll say about him is he had the bad luck of being in the best division in football in the NFC East. You had the Giants coming off a Super Bowl win, shortly prior to his hiring here for after Buddy got fired. The Redskins won the Super Bowl his first year in 91, 92, and then the Cowboys went on to have a dynasty, and then they were just kind of flooded with talent, so it was a difficult division to play in, but not a difficult decision to make. So those are my five, and interested in your top three.
Number three is, I think I'm pronouncing his name right, Marion Campbell. He coached the Eagles 83-85. He was 17-29-1. I was looking at the roster. He still had Jaws and Mike Quick, and he still had a fair decent team, and he didn't have a winning record. So he's at number three. I was debating on Actually, Ray Rhodes in the top five, but I wouldn't. It was a tough call there. There's a lot of bad coaches we've had over the years. So.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And number two is Rich Kukta. As you alluded to, he was just really awful, especially at the end of his tenure here, and he didn't even. He was really bad with the Jets. He won, two games with the Jets? He was, 2-14 one year?
2 years with the Jets, he won, I believe, four games total in 2 years, but he lost 35 out of his last 39 games with the Jets. An astronomically horrible, losing percentage.
I think that's worth
noting, even though he wasn't with the Eagles still, he was that bad that, he took an Eagles team that was a contender and a tough division, but still a contender, and that had, a lot of talent around him, and just destructed it. And I think after Buddy Ryan left, you saw guys start to leave. Reggie White left, and other guys were starting to leave as the team – as the ownership and the coach were kind of didn't take a huge passion for the team and a huge interest, for the players themselves. So that's definitely, I'm not surprised that you have him that high. And you have your number one pick is?
John Lucas. He coached the 76ers from 94 to 96. His overall record of the 76ers was 42-102 in 164 games. I remember hearing about him. He was really bad. His last season was 96, where they got the number one pick and they drafted Allen Iverson. So he wasn't there. He didn't coach Allen Iverson, but he was really bad. He's my number one.
Yeah, see, he's some of these guys, they coach, they're better as assistant coaches. He coached a decent amount of years, as an assistant and on national teams. He coached and like D league. So, and he was a player too. So he played in the league for almost 15 years. So I don't think he's a bad pick. You know, I definitely think Kotite, you know, is a top two guy. You know, it's
yep.
Some of those picks are debatable, but was the only reason that you had Rhodes not up there because he won Coach of the Year and made the playoffs, or you just thought other guys were worse?
I guess it's just because he did win Coach of the Year, and I mean he's outside my top five. He's like number six. It was between
yeah.
him and Ryan Sandberg, and I didn't want to have too many Eagles in my top five. It would look like an Eagles list, so I wanted to put at least a Phillies manager in there. So
yeah,
I actually
considered putting Randy Ayers with the Sixers in there, but I think I didn't want to put too many guys that were here for like such a short amount of time. That's why I took out
yeah.
Ayers and who was here, who was Larry Brown's assistant on the 01 team and then coached here. You probably remember shortly after that. It was like the Sixers went like a decade with like five or six different coaches after Brown quit for the Pistons. And, you know, I'm not a huge Brett Brown fan, but, you know, it's good to have some, you know, consistency and some familiarity for the best way to put it. And, you know, you want a guy you can rely on, especially if it's a coach who has the player's best interest at heart. And despite a guy like Andy Reid, who got to the postseason a lot but struggled in the big game, he was definitely a player's coach. So I think it was tough for me, not only because of Andy's prolonged success in getting to the playoffs, but the fact that he was well-liked by the players, but probably more just because there were so many guys that that were around that spent multiple years here. And if you also look at it, you know, there's been a fair amount of, you know, coaches in town here that won a championship as a coach that weren't, you know, that didn't win Coach of the Year or weren't like a top guy. And actually we'll get into now, segue into that. So we did our top five worst coaches in Philadelphia sports. This time we'll go back and forth again, starting with five and up to our number one with our five greatest coaches. And then we'll do some, and then if we want to, we can throw in some honorable mentions. I'm actually going to start with my honorable mentions, which are Charlie Manuel and Dick Vermeil. I love both of those guys. I especially love Chuck. Obviously won the 08 championship here, five straight division titles, and obviously made two World Series trips. And they're actually, in a couple of weeks, they're actually honoring at home for Alumni Weekend the 09 Phillies team that made it to the World Series versus the Yankees and the pennant-winning team. So, as much as I love Charlie Manuel, and it was tough for me excluding him from that list, but he's definitely within the top 10, and he's definitely honorable mention. Number five, I went with a hockey guy, a guy who has been around the block, not because he's a bad coach, but because he's not very well-liked, because he's a guy who gets the most out of his players because he yells and screams. Mike Keenan from the Flyers. He was actually with the Flyers for 4 years, from 84 to 88. He was the runner-up in the Stanley Cup Finals to pretty much the dynasty, the Wayne Gretzky, Yari Curry, dynasty Oilers teams. Took them to seven games in 87, and to large part of Ron Hextall, and he had a talented team around him, but he took like one of the best teams, in hockey history to a decisive game in the Cup Finals. Also faced them 2 years prior in 85 and had, another good year wedged in between those two in 86 and made the playoffs his final year here before being fired. So made the playoffs all 4 years, 32 playoff wins, reached 100 points or more his first 3 seasons and 3 out of the 4 seasons, and actually I believe had the best record. The NHL back then didn't have the trophy. I forget what the name of the trophy is. They gave away to the best record, but they didn't have it back then. But the Flyers under Keenan were one of the most well-respected teams during that era of the mid-80s in all of hockey, you know, probably next to the Oilers. And he won a cup in his only year with the Rangers. To give you an idea of how many, you know, places he's coached 8 different NHL teams, won a cup with the Rangers in 94, and then got fired there. Actually, I could be wrong. I think he got fired, but he was only there for 1 year. But one of the best coaches in Flyers history, I'll say that, and definitely a guy that deserves the praise. So that's my number 5 pick. Did you want to go with your number 5?
My number 5 is Doug Peterson. He obviously, he's the current head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles right now. He's 29-19 with 1 Super Bowl and 3-1 in the playoffs. He won the Super Bowl 2 years ago with Nick Foles as the backup after Carson Wentz went down. Against the Rams that season. I think winning the first Super Bowl in English history, he deserves to be in the top 5. 5 years from now, who knows? But right now, to me, he's at least in the top 5. He's number 5 for me.
Yeah, he's definitely, I think we both can agree on that, you know, he's one of the most well-respected coaches in the league. You know, I would say he's like top 3, top 4, and a guy that his stock is only rising, like you said, you know, being the incumbent coach, you know, the more playoff wins and hopefully the more Super Bowl wins he racks up here, you know, his status here, and I guess his, his
legacy.
People's opinions of him is what I'm trying to say will only increase, I guess, because, you know, he's already a legend in town for winning the first ever, you know, Super Bowl trophy in franchise history and breaking the 52-year championship drought. And also, not only that, but beating, you know, Brady and Belichick. That's just like icing on the cake. So, and then obviously beating the Bears last year, on that win. And I really think they, you know, he has a bright future ahead of him and an extremely ballsy, confident, but smart, but very, he's actually the ultimate coach because a lot of coaches, they're either very smart, but they're like a Belichick where they're very smart, but they're not very well liked because they're very cocky. Where they're very, they're very driven and cocky, but they lack in other areas. I feel like he is a guy that he's kind of underrated by some of the media because he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. So, you know, I definitely can agree with that. And my number 4 pick is Larry Brown. We talked to him a little bit about him earlier. He's had a lot of assistants over the years, won a championship in 04 with Detroit, but was with the Sixers for 6 years, from 97 to 03. He kind of gets a bad rap by some people because he wasn't the most loyal guy. He jumped around a lot, and I was
in NBA college.
Yeah, he jumped around a lot in the NBA. And just like he would quit teams randomly and then start up another team, or he just did things in a very poor way and just didn't seem like he was the most loyal guy. I mean, he was here for 6 years, so he was here, you know, more than 1 or 2 years, and you know, obviously made his mark here. I think as one of the, you know, one of the best Sixers coaches of all time. You know, so there's no question there. I just think that some people, you know, they can't put their biases aside. I had to do that because he was so well prepared. He was such a talented X's and O's guy, type of guy. Always got his team prepared. And obviously he got the most out of Allen Iverson. And, you know, obviously the 0-1 team, getting all the way to the finals. The Lakers were undefeated, 15-0, going into that NBA Finals round, and then stealing home court advantage. Obviously, it went downhill from there, but and then he won Coach of the Year that year. So there's not much more to say about him. His record and his moments kind of speak for themselves. I will say that
absolutely.
He's definitely a guy that deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I know he already is, but you know, people that are doubting him because of his loyalty, his stats speak for himself. So that's all I'll say. So he's my number four pick, we'll get to your pick now. And who do you have next?
I had Larry Brown originally number four, but then I changed it. I have him outside my top five. He's one of my hard mentions. But I have Dallas Green. He won the first World Series in Philly's history. He only coached here for 3 seasons, but he won 160 games with 9-7 in the playoffs and, as I said, one World Series. And he's one of the most beloved Philly's managers of all time. I wish I got to see him manage, but obviously I wasn't around then in 81, but I've heard a lot of great things about him.
Yeah, he's a very well-liked guy. He's the type of guy you seem like you could probably sit and chat with baseball and have a beer with and talk, like, you know, for 3 hours about baseball with. I really liked him. I just think that it's tough sometimes to kind of distinguish how really good a coach is, if he's handed a talented team. I'm not going to take that away from him. I think he was a guy that definitely deserved to be here. I think he's definitely one of the better coaches. I would probably put him in my top 10. And like I said, he's definitely, you know, a guy that is well-respected and well-liked and obviously, you know, accomplished a lot in the little time he was here. So, you know, I can definitely agree with him being put up there. My number three pick, a lot of millennials and young guys might not know this, but I'm going with Greasy Neal. He's in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. He's a two-time NFL champ. He was actually the Eagles coach for 10 years from 41 to 1950. And he actually coached briefly the Steelers, which was the Eagles and the Steelers combined in 1943 for 1 year for one team because of World War II. There were so little players because a lot of the players from the league from both teams signed up for the war and went into went to serve their country that they didn't have complete rosters, so they basically agreed on a team of players, and he got to coach that team. wasn't very good, but they were pretty good. But and then he went on in 48 and 1949 and won back to back. Back then it was the NFL championship, way before 20 years before the Super Bowl was even around. He had some good players. You know, Tommy Thompson, Chuck Benarek, Steve Van Buren, those types of guys, Pete Pijos. But I think that he doesn't get the respect that he deserves. And I know that he was in a league, he was coaching a league that didn't have, you know, more than just like 12 teams in the league around, but still was a very solid coach. And was here, you know, a long time, 10 years, two championships. And, you know, back then, once you made the playoffs, you immediately qualified for the championship game, since there were two divisions. So two teams made the playoffs. So he was 11-1 in 1949, and he was kind of the epitome of the World War II, post-World War II, you know, blue-collar type of guy, successful coach. So, you know, he actually lived pretty long too. He was passed away in the early 70s at 81, and you know, he made his mark here as one of the best Eagles coaches of all time, and I think he definitely doesn't get the credit that he deserves among Eagles fans. So he's my number three pick.
Yeah, I think I had one. I think I might have had considered him in the top, my top five too. It was either him or some 1950. I was looking at the list earlier. I think it was a 1950 Eagles head coach. Was it?
Yeah, he was. He was here till 1950, and then there was kind of like a rotating cast of guys after that. Up until, you know, some guys lasted a couple years, but then Buck Shaw was the guy that won the championship in 1960 over the Packers, but Greasy Neal was the one that won the first two championship titles with the Eagles. He actually won it in 48 over the Cardinals, who were in Chicago at the time, and then the Rams in 49, who were first in L.A. So who's your number three pick?
My number three is Uncle Charlie Manuel. As you alluded to earlier, he won the World Series in 2008. He won 780 games, and he managed over a thousand games as a Philadelphia Philly. He was here from 2005 to 2012. While he was 27-19 in the playoffs, won five division titles. We all know that. And he was a great guy overall, and still is. He's an ambassador of the Phillies organization now. He's always at ceremonies that we honor the people, and he'll always be beloved in the city.
Yeah, he at the All-Star game in Cleveland, where obviously he used to coach before here, a couple weeks ago. There was a futures All-Star team for the All-Star Game festivities that weekend in Cleveland. And even though he was coaching the American League futures team, I don't know if you saw this, but it was tweeted out that a photo was taken of Charlie wearing Phillies gear, wearing, I think, a Phillies I think it was a Phillies T-shirt. Despite coaching an American League team at the All-Star break, which I don't think is a big deal, but, you know, for people making a big headache about it. But, you know, he's obviously a guy that is well-liked here. Let me ask you this before we get to some of our top picks, our top two picks. Would you still have some of these guys on your top five if they didn't win a championship, like Dallas Green? Would you, you know, do you value some of these guys despite them winning a championship, or do you think that the championship just adds on to it? You know, I know it's a tough call, but let's just say, like, yeah. with with Dallas Green? Do you think he would be a top five guy?
No.
A top five coach if he didn't win if he didn't win it? You didn't think he would be?
No, because he wasn't here long enough. I think I was kind of biased to the championship. Because all my guys in the top five have won the championship. I don't see that.
Yeah. See, some of those guys
I think
are definitely deserving. You know, but there have been bad coaches that have, you know, that have won like Super Bowls before. You know, and they're, you know, so that's why I was just curious. You know, if you would, you know, about Green, if you would have had him up there, because you know it's tough to determine because some of these guys. You know, they won a championship, but some of them won, you know, really big championships, monumental ones or you know, ones that meant a lot to the team. You know, like Green won the first one, you know, ever for the Phillies. And obviously Peterson won the first Super Bowl and Greasy Neal, even though there wasn't as many teams back then, there was, you know, more than double the amount now, the amount of teams that there are now than there were back when he was coaching, but he still won the first championships for the team. So it's tough to really determine. That's why I thought it was interesting. You know, some of the guys we chose were in there, some weren't.
Yeah.
That won a championship here. So actually, my number two guy, I'm going to go with Doug Peterson. I actually debated putting him lower on the list, but the fact that he won the first Super Bowl title, beat Belichick, beat Brady, you know, and nobody was obviously the whole underdog mantra. Nobody was pulling for the Eagles to win. Not only that, but beating the number one defense in the Vikings and the former the reigning MVP. And Matt Ryan and the Falcons in that whole year, and then, you know, the next year, this past year, you know, pulling out, you know, a close win in Soldier Field over the Bears, and then, you know, I think they could have won that that New Orleans game if they hadn't rushed that 2-minute warning, and then who knows, they probably could have repeated because let's face it, the Rams, you know.
Yeah.
They narrowly beat New Orleans and then just didn't show up in the Super Bowl. So I think Peterson's stock is definitely rising. You know, so he's a guy that was definitely a smart hire. So that's my number two pick.
My number two is actually 1A. I have two tied for number one. My number one is 1A is head coach of the Flyers, the one that won the Stanley Cup, Fred. What's his name? What's his last name?
Fred Shiro.
Yeah, he's my 1A. He was here from 71 to 78. He obviously won the two Stanley Cups back to back. He's the winningest head coach in Flyers history. I don't know too much about him, but I know you're a big Flyers guy, so I'll let you off.
Shiro is actually my number one pick. You know, was just the head of the Broad Street Bullies, a guy that was very deep in thought. That's where he got that the Fog nickname from, and was just a very you know, a very interesting guy. Would be an interesting guy to make a movie out of because he won championships. His sons went on to coach. I believe his son, Ray, was the GM of the Penguins and the Devils. And I think he had another son as well that were, you know, builders in hockey. And then Fred went on to make the Hockey Hall of Fame as an inductee, as a builder in 2013, which I think was long overdue. He won those championships in 74 and 75. He was also the first coach in hockey history to have an assistant coach. He also implemented a lot of, you know, different systems that were new to the game and just brought a lot of a lot to the game, and always kind of reinvented himself. And he was very introverted, but extremely smart, and brought a lot to hockey. And he also, you know, back then, fighting and intimidation with the Broad Street Bullies. Hockey and NHL as a league and as a sport was just a more fighting sport. Nowadays, it's more, you know, more skill, and there's less, you know, tough guys and fourth line guys, and more skill guys, you know, whereas back when Shiro was around coaching the Flyers, and, you know, in the 70s and then with the Rangers, he kind of used fighting guys like Dave Schultz as a tactic. You know, he kind of valued team toughness, and, you know, it was just, there was actually a couple books written on it that kind of credit that, you know, some of the things he did, and that was one of them. And he wasn't really the type of guy that kind of gave players the lesson to fight, but kind of just projected toughness and just did a lot overall for hockey. And also was also the first coach to study film. His son Ray, who I just mentioned, has mentioned in interviews that he recalled his father breaking down game film from radio broadcasts. Fred was also the first head coach in the NHL to have his players use the in-season training with the use of different equipment machines. So he also, one last thing, he also adopted the morning skate, which we see, you know, with every team now. So obviously won the two cups back-to-back here with the Flyers, was here almost a decade. He even took the Rangers to a cup finals in his first year here. So a definitely well-respected guy that just, you know, got a lot out of his players, you know, and not much more you can say of him, just the fact that he was extremely introverted,
right,
but extremely smart too, so.
Yep. Do you think he was underrated in this city? Because, I mean, hockey's not the number one sport here, but do you think he's a little underrated?
So I think he's at all in the what?
Underrated as like respected coach in the city. But I know hockey's not a huge sport in the city as the other three.
Hockey's bigger than you think in this city. There's actually a lot of, I know a lot of Flyers fans. I wouldn't say he's underrated. I would say he's probably not as the best way to put it is by a lot of young people that don't either know a lot about hockey or haven't done their research, don't know enough about him. I know you don't watch a whole lot of hockey, so, you know, that's
part
of it. Yeah, so it's no big deal. It's, you know, some people don't watch it as much as other people, and some people don't follow it at all, but I wouldn't say he's underrated. I would say he's probably not as known by some of the young fans in the city. And by young, I mean, like, you know, 20 to 25, you know, in that age range, or even younger, like teens and whatnot. So.
Okay. I'll go ahead and give my number one. My number one's Billy Cunningham. He coached here in 1977 to 85. He won 650. He coached 650 games. He won 450 games. Went to 3 NBA Finals. Only won one title. He averaged 57 wins a game per season. He's the third highest winning percentage in NBA history, and all time winning head coach in tennis. 76ers history, and 12th all-time in NBA history winning percentage. winningest head coach in NBA history.
Yeah, I was actually debating on putting him in the top five, but the only reason I didn't was just because he had such stacked teams. When you look in 83, once they got Moses Malone, I believe they had the best record in the league, in all of NBA. They actually did. They had the best record actually by seven games, 65 wins. And then you have, you know, Moses, Doc, Mo Cheeks, you know, the Boston Strangler, Bobby Jones, Clint Richardson, Ivoroni, you know, and, you know, probably, you know, a decent executive and Pat Williams and some, you know, decent coaching staff. But he wasn't a bad coach. I think he was a good coach. I don't think he was a great coach, though. I don't think he ever won Coach of the Year. I could be wrong, unless it wasn't around back then. Won, actually, the only thing he ever won was Coach of the Month for the month of December in that 82-83 season. I'll have to do some research.
Yeah.
I think the NBA Coach of the Year award was around back then. I just don't think he won. And I know he, you know, won a couple Eastern Conference championships in 80 and 82 before the, you know, before the faux season of 83
yeah.
with Moses. But the reason I didn't include him was not because I didn't think he was good. I just think that he had such talent that they did a lot for him. So, and I think it was more of him complimenting the roster rather than, you know, a decent roster and a good coach complimenting it. Whereas kind of like in 01, I think Larry Brown, they already had AI, but I think Larry Brown kind of put them over the hump, you know, in getting that far. They had some lucky breaks, but, you know, you kind of get what I'm saying. But,
yeah.
You know.
I totally get what you're saying.
Yeah, and Billy Cunningham actually, I believe, was on the 67 championship Sixers team as a power forward and a small forward. You know, he didn't start out as a big scorer. He actually spent a couple of stints here. He went to Carolina in the ABA in the mid 70s and then briefly came back here, but won a championship here in 67 with Wilt. And then it was an assistant coach. And then obviously, like you mentioned, was the head coach on that 83 team. So I got some interesting coaches there. Did you have any other honorable mentions you wanted to add? I know we added some in passing. A couple of guys mentioned, like Cunningham and Charlie Manuel, not to mention Dick Vermeil. Those are mine. Did you have any?
Yeah. I'll say one more thing about Billy, too. He's in the Hall of Fame as, I think, the head coach. I don't think he's in the Hall of Fame as a player. I think it's as a head coach. But I could be wrong there. But, yeah, that's all I have to say about Billy. My other mentions, obviously, Dick Vermeil, Larry Brown, I know I'm forgetting somebody.
I would say another one of mine is that comes to mind that a lot of people forget about is Peter Laviolette of the Flyers. He's another. He's kind of like Mike Keenan, where he doesn't last long with teams, but he gets the most out of his players. He's kind of the opposite of the soft-spoken guy. You know, when he does an interview, he might be very polite, but, you know, behind the scenes, he's pushing his players, and he gets the most out of his players. I mean, that 2010 Flyers team, I know they almost missed the playoffs, you know, on the last day they made it, but they went all the way to the finals and, you know, were a couple goals shy of winning a cup, and He had a couple other good teams after that, and you know, he won a cup with Carolina. So he's a guy that definitely has earned his stripes and has been a respectable coach and could definitely be in the Hall of Fame one day. So I definitely agree with that pick. So I know we wanted to get into some Phillies. Through 100 games, Phillies are chasing the Braves by 7.5 games at 52-48. And they're a game back of the Nats. I believe they're also a half game behind St. Louis for the second NL wildcard spot if the playoffs started today. I know we did our first half predictions. I'm sorry, our first half reaction and our second half predictions a couple of shows ago. But over the last week, you know, you had the Hoskins game-winning home run, and then Harper's kind of heated up a little bit. Has anything stuck out to you as we're heading into August?
The one thing that stuck out is Harper's batting average with runners in scoring position. He's been clutch in the last since the All-Star break. Even before that, he's starting to come around. I think his batting average is now
258. Yes.
Yeah,
total average is 258. But his last 14 days, he's hitting 306. He seems to be getting a little bit better, and you know, his platoon splits have been kind of the same with some of his other splits. But I'm hoping he kind of heats up as, you know, as we get into, you know, August, and as we kind of turn the tide into, you know, the cool weather in September, because for his career, his monthly splits in August, he's a career 293 hitter, and in September/October, Harper's a career 283 hitter, and he has an OBP combined in those 2 months for his career of 386, which is pretty good. So what do you expect of him over the last 62 games, and what do you want to see happen from him, you know, in anything, you know, in the lineup, in the field, whatever it may be?
I would like to see his maybe strikeouts cut down a little bit, and then his power. I want to see more home runs from him, because 17 is okay. Like, we all expected about 30 plus, even some expect 40. I mean, I know I predicted about 38 home runs for him this year. I mean, he'll get up there. It's just a matter of him just hitting the ball and play. I mean, I think he's cutting down on strikeouts.
I would like to see his plate discipline improve.
Yeah.
You know?
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
It just seems like last year, his walks were, I know he was in a, he was kind of in a contract year, but his walks were extremely high. And, you know, this year, his stats are just not really flashy at all. And, do you think this team can make a run for the division over the next, you know, 2.5 months, you know, 2 months from now? You know, will we see a team that, you know, is, you know, edging in on the Nationals for the division race? Or is this a team more primed for, you know, either restocking for next year or gearing up for, like, a second wild card spot? What do you see for this for this team's future the next couple months?
I think it all depends on this next week, especially this weekend against the Braves at home. I think it's going to be the biggest series in 8 years. I know that's a bold statement to say, but if they don't win the series against the Braves, I think you can shut the door on the division. I know I've been optimistic a lot, but this series is very, very important in getting back into the division race. We don't win the series, we have to look at the wild card. And National League is, I don't want to say weak, but everybody's so bunched together that we can stay in the wild card race. But I would obviously rather win the division. It would have to take us getting hot, and it would have to take Atlanta kind of falling apart. And the Nationals, you can't rule them out either.
Yeah.
They have to fall down too.
The Dodgers have been like so dominant this year, you know, for a team that's just edging in for the second wild card spot, and you go, you know, a couple games to LA and you gotta face, you know, Ryu and Bueller and Kershaw, and you know, Kershaw used to be their number one guy, like one of the, you know, arguably the best pitcher in the league, and he's like their number three guy this year, arguably. You know, and then you have a formidable lineup, you know, kind of front and back with the Dodgers, who are actually leading the league in OPS, and Bellinger's, you know, was my MVP pick for the NL. You know, you've had some guys like Muncy, Turner, and Jock Peterson, as well as Vertigo, who, you know, who've just, you know, given that team a steady lineup. You know, one thing about Harper, he is on pace for 27 home runs and 113 RBIs and right around 100 walks this year. Although he didn't make the All-Star team, you know, he is having a respectable year, and obviously he has many more years in red pinstripes to kind of make that even better. I think Hoskins has been arguably their best hitter this year. I know Kingery's kind of come on late, you know, in the outfield, but Hoskins has given them that power. And I believe at one point he was leading the league in walks, and his OBP for the majority of the year has hovered right around 400. What do you think this pitching staff needs to do, or what are some of your thoughts on this starting pitching staff going forward? Because we kind of talked a little bit about this earlier and in previous shows. You know, Nola has a good record, but he's gotten good run support, and he's been, you know, so-so. He's been like more of like a number three guy. You know, Arrieta has just been a train wreck ever since he got here. He's had some injuries, and, you know, I hope they can find a way to get rid of him after the season ends. You know, there really hasn't been one guy that's just been all-around dominant. You know, all those years, you know, like in the mid-2000s, you know, and even in like the 90s, you had guys like Hamels and Schilling on those teams, and then you had like crap everywhere else. This team, you know, I know they picked up Smiley, but he hasn't been – he had a great, you know, start the other day in his debut here, but he's not the answer. You know, what do you think they need to do with the pitching staff?
Well, just we're – what's today's date? Today is the 23rd, I think. Right?
Yeah.
So tomorrow will be one week before the trade deadline. So it's very crucial to get a guy. There's several guys out there we can talk about in a few minutes as we segue to the trade rumors and stuff. There's a few guys that they should go after, even a reliever. We're going to get David Robinson and Sir Anthony back, and hopefully they both stay healthy, knock on wood. But that should help the bullpen a little bit. I think Naris is going to be on a short leash with those two coming back. To be honest, I mean, as much as he's been a solid closer in, what, two or three games, he's cost us two or three games in the standings where we could have won that series, especially the one last weekend against the Nationals where he blew that game in the ninth.
Yeah, this is one of the, this is actually probably the worst Phillies pitching staff since I started watching them that I've ever seen. Every year since I started watching them, there's been at least, you know, one or two good pitchers, whether it be a reliever or a starter. Like I said, even when they had like crap at the, you know, at the end of the rotation, you know, in like the late 90s and, you know, mid 2000s, you know, you had a guy like, you know, Hamels or Schilling, and those guys were able to step in and give you a solid start. And then you even had some strong relievers and, you know, Pitalico and, you know, then you had Lidge and so forth. But this team, they really just, I know they've had injuries, but they really haven't had a guy that's just been dominant. And then you kind of look at some of the guys they picked up have gotten injured as well, which I wanted to ask you about. Almost a week ago, last Wednesday, Jay Bruce was placed on the 10-day DL with a right oblique strain, and he's actually expected to miss 3 weeks out of game action. So he's not due back for, you know, until like early
mid-August.
You know, we'll see what happens with that because he's been, you know, probably the best bat off the bench this year, you know, since, you know, Kingery's kind of stepped in for, you know, for Herrera.
Gotcha.
And what's that?
No, I was going to say he was stepping in for McCutcheon at the leadoff.
Yeah, for some of the guys that, you know, for McCutcheon and for Herrera, who as well, who was suspended. So I'm kind of looking through some of the stats here, but what do you see happening with some of the bench pieces now that Bruce is sidelined for the next few weeks or so?
I think guys like Hoskins needs to step up a little bit. We need to see the gene that even Gene Segura is injured now. I don't know if he's going to be playing tonight. The lineup hasn't come out yet, but I wouldn't be surprised if they sat him for at least this game or maybe tomorrow. But Gene needs to step up again. He hasn't been the same since the end of May. Kimmy's been our best hitter. Hoskins and Harper to both get hot. Matter of fact, here comes the lineup now. And no, Dean Skinner is not in the lineup tonight. Harper's the DH.
Alright, that's interesting.
Yes. It's Kimmy, Hoskins, Harper, Renuto, Hernandez, Rinko, Haisley, Quinn, and Williams. So our outfield is not, it's fairly good. It's Harper's the DH, right? So they're giving him the DH, right? So you move.
Yeah, I'm not a,
you got Quinn
I'm not
there.
A fan of Nick Williams. I think Nick Williams is horrible. I haven't really seen anything from him. And, you know, Segura, you know, over the last couple of weeks, he's hit, like, right around, like, 220, 225. And then the last month, you know, he's hit under 290. So, and he's not a guy to draw a lot of walks. But even then, he's better than some of these young guys. I would still put Segura out there unless he needs a break. But, you know, I like Real Muto in the middle of the lineup, but that's one of the things that that I get on Gabe about, because the lineups are so bizarre. Like, you had Harper leading off one game. Harper is not a leadoff hitter, and that's one thing. That's one of the reasons why I, you know, I'm not a fan of Gabe. You know, for some of his, you know, bizarre lineup moves, and some of his like positioning in terms of where guys are in the lineup and who's at what position. And it's okay to give a guy, you know, especially a veteran guy, a break every now and then, especially if you're on a road trip. But that's just one of his weaknesses. But before we get into a couple of the last few things, over the last, 60 games, what do you think Gabe needs to do to steer this team into a playoff position?
Pending injuries, of course, he needs to have a consistent lineup, which I think he's fairly had besides the injuries. Because he needs to not overuse the bullpen, and I think he needs to let guys like Nola go deep in the game if they're pitching well. I think he's been fairly cautious with Arrieta because of his elbow problems, and I think that's fair because you don't want to overuse Jake as bad as his elbow is. If you overuse him, he gets injured worse, then we're in trouble. So, as much as Jake has been bad, he's better than what we have, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think he's the lone problem with this team right now is all I'll say to kind of reiterate what I was saying earlier about all the, if you just look down the line of all the injuries, current and throughout this year with this team, every team has injuries, but this team has exceeded the average amount, whatever that figure is, and just, struggled to kind of, stay a team. So, we'll see what happens. Plenty more baseball to play, and obviously, playoff spots are up for grabs, even if they don't get the division. So we're going to segue into a few small things before we wrap up. What's that?
I have a question for you. I wanted to ask you that question. What do you think Gabe needs to do in the next 60 games or so?
I think he needs to not be his own worst enemy. I think he just needs to put the best lineup out there, not to do anything funky or strange to try to change things up. You brought in Harper, you brought in Segura. I know some of the guys you brought in are injured, but Hoskins is back at his natural position. Don't put him back at left field. Just, put guys where they're most comfortable and put, and kind of also stick with your instincts too. Hopefully it'll be the right instinct, but just put the team out there that's best. And so we'll get into some other stuff before we wrap up. A little over a week ago on the 15th, it was reported on Twitter by The Athletic NBA insider / writer Shams. I can't say his last name, Karania, that Sixers point guard Ben Simmons had agreed to a 5-year, $170 million maximum contract extension to stay here with the Sixers. They offered, according to the report, Sixers management offered Simmons the deal 2 weeks prior on July 2nd, and he agreed to sign it after mulling it over. This is kind of interesting because, Simmons made the All-Star team for the first time this year. It was all rookie 2 years ago. And he's kind of a guy that, has some shooting issues, has struggled with that. And, it's tough because they're trying to figure out what's best for him. What position do you put him at? Because he's a 6'10 guy playing guard. 230 pounds, but he also has speed. He's a guy that, the good thing is, you can get versatility out of him, where if a guy's injured and you need to fill him in at a small forward or shooting guard position, you know, you pencil him in at the two or three, you know, instead of the one. You know, that way he can kind of get a feel for other positions as well, and also, you know, help out the team. But I would like for him this off season to continue working on his shooting. I'm not thrilled about the contract. 22 years old. 23, I'm sorry. He actually had a birthday. Happy birthday to him a few days ago. You know, so it's going to be interesting. We're not going to really know, you know, if he sizes up to this contract until it kind of unfolds the next couple years. I don't think so far he has, but only having played 2 years, I think he's definitely deserving of an extension. That's you know, what I'll say on that. What are your thoughts on the Simmons deal, the deal itself, and the value of it?
I'll say this. I say, did he deserve the money? Probably not. The amount of what he got, but that's unfortunately today's NBA market and today's sports. If we know Harper, he kind of got overpaid too. But does he deserve a contract extension? Yes. But he needs to prove that he needs to shoot. He needs to shoot. Obviously, that's all we want him to do. When everybody says, once you shoot, that's game, that's a wrap. Because everything else he does well. Well, the only thing that's not is his shooting and his free throw shooting. So if he touches that up this offseason, which I think he can, I believe he can, and he will, the Sixers are going to go far deep in the playoffs this season. And I really believe that. Him and Embiid and Harris could be a very underrated trio.
Yeah, and they added some pieces, you know, this offseason, you know, with Horford and whatnot. And I would like them to get some more shooters. You know, we'll talk some more Sixers in the future, but I know we want to touch on that real quick. Without a doubt, he's definitely a talent that's worth having around and keeping here. So I'm glad they locked him up, that they were able to come to a quick agreement on terms with the contract. You know, so, you know, we'll look forward to having him, you know, in Sixers blue for, you know, the long haul. So, quick thing before we get into some, if you wanted to get into some Twitter shout outs or if you wanted to get into some last minute stuff. Players, for the Eagles, tomorrow, actually, is the first day that players for the Eagles report to the NovaCare Complex in Philly for the start of 2019 training camp this offseason. This upcoming Thursday, the 25th at noon, is when the first Eagles training camp practice for this year begins. 1:30 p.m. tomorrow. I'm sorry, Thursday. The day of that practice, Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson will have press conferences after practice, and then players will be available on the field. And then there's going to be some practices on Friday and Saturday, you know, before training camp continues onward into the next week. So, you know, we talked some interesting coaching topics. Some Sixers, you know, some Eagles, and, you know, next time we'll get into, we'll dive into the Eagles, you know, which are coming up on a, preseason game pretty soon. So, did you have anything that you wanted to add?
Do you want to discuss like some of the trade rumors for the Phillies since the deadline's a week away, before we go into shout-outs?
Yeah, we could do that, yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure, you know, what you were. I think you definitely follow, have been following the team and the rumor, the deadline rumors more than I have this year, so you can shed some more light on it. But one thing I will say is I was thoroughly impressed with Smiley's debut. I would really like them to see I would really like management go after Madison Bumgarner, who hasn't had a great year, but he has the postseason experience. A veteran guy, is also an excellent hitter, too, at the plate, which you don't often find, and arguably the greatest postseason pitcher of all time. So anytime you can add him to your rotation, you know, with this group of scrubs who, you know, can't seem to put a win together without the offense's help, you know, wouldn't be a bad idea. Were there any other guys at the trade deadline that the Phillies were looking at that you saw or that you thought that would be a good fit?
One name is Zach Greinke. If we could possibly get him on the cheap end by eating his contract and maybe giving them a prospect or two, we could probably do that. That's one name out there that's floating around. Another one is we're actually facing him tonight, Matthew Boyd of the Tigers, and the closer, Sean Green of the Tigers. Those are two other names that are floating around. There's actually, I think, Matt Quintat was reportedly being, it's in Detroit right now, watching Matthew, he's going to watch Matthew Boyd today. And yesterday there was some scouts, the Tiger scouts at Reading, watching some of the Reading players. So there might be something going on there. Who knows? I mean, Matt Quinta being at the Tiger games, maybe he just wants to watch a game, but it's kind of coincidence that one of the rumors is Matthew Boyd. So that's one name to keep an eye on. Another one is obviously, as you said, Madison Bumgarner. But the Giants have been playing well lately, so I don't know if they're going to be sellers now. They're back in the wild card race, so that's unfortunate. But that's one name to keep an eye on too. Another one is Robbie Ray from the D-backs, and then Mike Miner from the Rangers. But I think he's going to cost a lot. And then you got Marcus Stroman from the Blue Jays, and maybe even Clint, bring back Ken Giles to bolster this bullpen a little bit. You have any thoughts on those names, or which one they should go after?
Yes, Stroman would be a good pick. Boyd has great stuff, but I don't think he's the guy that we should go after. I don't think it's a coincidence that Gillick was in Detroit. You know, he's representing the Phillies. The Phillies are looking for starting pitching at the deadline. I don't think that's a coincidence that he's there. He's not a scout, but he's also, you know, he can still report, you know, on what he liked and what he disliked and what occurred in the game, you know, from his vantage point.
Exactly.
So I think that's something that
maybe
we need to keep an eye on. I would like Greinke. I'm wondering if he's had a great year with the Diamondbacks, and he's a guy that's bounced around and has performed well with, like, pretty much every team that he's been with, American League and National League. And my only question with him is age. He's 35. He's been excellent this year. He even made the All-Star team, and his WHIP, walks of hits divided by innings pitched, is really good, and he has the sub-3 ERA. He's definitely been one of the better National League pitchers this year, and a guy that could just, you know, be a veteran presence to the locker room, you know, a fresh arm. and somebody that could definitely, you know, lend a helping hand. Like I said, Boyd, he would be better than what we have, but that's not really saying much. Stroman, he's been kind of back and forth. He's been good this year. A couple of years ago, he had a breakout year with Toronto, and then he was horrible last year, but I think he was injured. So, you know, maybe he's healthy now. You know, and but the Giants and Bumgarner kind of depends on what his future plans are. A lot of players, they want to test the market, and, you know, if you're the GM of that team, you want to get, you know, some stock, some quality in return, rather than your pitcher leaving for nothing and becoming a free agent.
Free agent.
Now, he's actually a free agent. Bumgarner is after this year. So that's another reason why I think it would benefit the Giants and him to kind of go their separate ways. He was actually he made a list of teams that he thought would be interested in him to kind of raise, you know, the stock to kind of get more money out of some of the teams that he thought would be interested in him, and he listed the Phillies on that. Now, that doesn't mean he'd be interested in coming here, but he's smart enough to understand that the Phillies, you know, are looking to contend, need starting pitching, and he's obviously a guy that would fill that, you know, that missing link, despite some of the issues and back and forth problems he's had this year. But I think what he can do in the postseason and at the plate can speak for itself. So it'd be pretty interesting to see. So I think Bumgarner and Greinke would be the guys I would pencil, and then Stroman, then anybody else, you know, would be a step up from what we have. But those would be definitely some guys to look out for, you know, to significantly bolster the team more than just, you know, by a hair.
Absolutely. By this time next week, hopefully, the Phillies made a trade or they're about to make a trade. We'll talk more about that next week, too, because the trade deadline will be 1 week from tomorrow at 4 p.m., I believe. So
yeah,
it's going to be an interesting 7 days.
We have a lot coming up. We have, you know, Phillies, you know, a big game coming on tonight. Versus a horrible Detroit team. I think that's a three-game set, right? And
two-game.
You know, two games?
Yeah, and then they have off on Thursday. So they have a weird week. They have a Monday and Thursday off.
Yeah, they're usually off on Thursdays, and then they start a weekend series. So they really need to sweep this short series with a tie versus a horrible, struggling Tigers team who's been bad all year long. You know, but there's a lot coming on, you know, we have the start of training camp tomorrow, the trade deadline coming up in just over a week.
Next week, soon.
You know, and then we have the Eagles' first preseason game coming up in, you know, right around 2 weeks on August 8th. So, a lot to look forward to. So, did you want to do some shout-outs before we wrap things up?
Absolutely. This Friday, we're going to do a special Philly sports game show with my co-host Doug and his brother Daniel. They're my co-hosts of Unscripted Wrestling. So we're going to be doing previews of the NFL. Two divisions per show. This week we're gonna start with the NFC East and the NFC East, and we're gonna have a special guest from the Voight Studio Podcast Network. His name is James. He's gonna be coming on and joining us, and you're more than welcome to come on, Kyle, if you're available too.
Yeah, I would definitely like to join you guys for some of those shows, and you know, you get, you know, various takes on the divisions, and it's interesting because some years you'll be involved in a division in any sport where the teams are just stacked. I mean, like, and then you get a year where, you know, the team might just skate by and win the division, you know. So, you know, this year the Phillies are in the thick of it. You know, the Nats have, you know, clawed their way back in and have leapfrogged over the Phillies. And they're just a game up, but they have two games in hand. So if the Nats lose those two, you know, it should be interesting. And then the Braves have kind of pulled away. So it's been an interesting year in baseball.
Yep.
Cubs kind of started out hot. The Twins, you know, have been, you know, an impressive team in the American League, you know, where they get forgotten about with the Yankees, the Astros, and even the Red Sox, who are still in the playoff hunt after winning the title last year, and even the Indians, too, who are chasing the Twins. So you have all these, like, you know, bigger market, usually more successful teams that are getting the lion's share of press. But then you see the Dodgers have just been, you know, been able to kind of put things together finally. So it should be pretty interesting. I don't think some of the other teams in the NL will be able to compete for the wild card. I think it'll be between a Milwaukee or St. Louis or Philadelphia for the final wild card. And I think San Francisco would be wise enough to sell at the deadline. Same with Arizona and some of the other, like, fringe teams, you know, even like the Mets in San Diego. You know, so, you know, we'll discuss the arrangements, and definitely a lot, you know, to thumb over all six divisions before the final 62 games, roughly, in the season wraps up before the playoffs. So it should be a fun ride.
Yep. I just want to thank all our followers and listeners to the podcast. We have almost 600 followers on Twitter. At this count, we have about 580. So thank you to all the followers and all the listeners. Keep on listening and enjoying the show. Do you have any final thoughts and shout-outs or plugs?
One thing, I'll just plug our Twitter. You can DM any of us, comment on any of our posts, or at us at the Philly Sports Passion Podcast, at Philly SP Podcast, and that's not cap sensitive. And then individually, you can reach us at Eric's at Big E Jacinto, JACINTO, and then myself at Kyle, KYLE underscore Lutz, LUTZ underscore. And then again, the Philly Sports Passion Podcast account at Philly SP Podcast. And then during the show, if you listen live, you can tune in as well as add questions or comments for the show. So I'd like to thank Eric, and tune in until next time for the Philly Sports Passion Podcast.
I have one more thing. I want to say that we're on Spotify now, and iTunes, and Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
So look out for us on that as well, and reach out on Twitter and on Facebook as well. And look out for the show on Friday, as well as the other divisional shows, and as well as the weekly show during the afternoon. And then we'll get into next show, next week. We'll talk some Eagles training camp, Eagles preseason, you know, throw in a little bit of Phillies right around the trade deadline, which, you know, we'll probably do it either the day before or the day of, and hot stove, and then whatever else is is going on in Philly sports. So tune in until next time. And from Mara DeGinto, this is Kyle Lutz for the Philly Sports Passion Podcast. Thank you.
Adios.